She's April.
And she's Molly.
And we are
the Book Besties. You've got to read this one. You've got to read this one. It's going to be the one that you're like, oh, I wish I would have read it sooner, because that's how I feel right now.
I don't have time for a book hangover.
It was Bella running through the streets of an Italian city to keep Edward from showing his glowing skin.
The flakes are like time.
She's gotta be Illuminati or something, because she has not aged ever.
She's in the circle of trust.
He's a dick.
Okay, so I have a slight content warning. We are going to be talking about war, battle, violence. There is talks of alcoholism and death in this novel. You've been warned. Two halves of a whole are back again!
I keep seeing that TikTok sound where it's like, twin, where have you been? Yeah. And I'm like, that's how I feel right now.
Yeah.
I've been off for the past 2 weeks.
Nobody loves me like you do.
I've been off for the past 2 weeks because I was doing some stuff for work and it was just a lot. And I was supposed to be out for surgery, but I didn't have surgery. But by the time this episode airs, I will have had a different procedure.
So what did you think of our episodes?
So the first one was weird. And
that book
I think
was fucking weird, homie.
I think that the issue with that episode was the content of the book and not the content of my besties. And I, as of filming this, I haven't actually seen
that is true
the second one yet. But I'll be watching it after we finish filming.
If it makes you feel any better, I am stumbling over my words just as much the second one as the first one.
That's not what I heard. Tom told me that it was better.
Sure. As I said, you'll hear it in the intro. I use one word and then I use it again. And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, Molly, you're such a day. With same content.
He put that in the intro. He's a dick.
No, he's picking on his little sister. I fucking get it. I deserve it sometimes. But
well, he told me that it was better than the first one.
It was
one.
Good. I mean, we kept it. Both were good. It's just pacing's weird because me being the boss is weird.
Well, I talked to him about the book that we're talking about today when I finished it yesterday, because that's how on my game I am.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really loved this book.
Me
and he's
too.
Like, did Molly like it? And I was like, yeah, she really loved it too. He's like, it's going to be a great episode then. And I'm like,
yeah.
Why do you say that? And he's like, when you both like the episode, the content is better. And I'm like, I don't know. Sometimes when we both hate the book, the content is pretty good too. It's that weird mix of like, either one of us likes it and the other doesn't. The content of the book doesn't really match the pod vibe, you know?
No, and there is times where one of us will be in love with a book and the other will be like,
yeah.
And we don't want to bring down a book the other loves so much, right?
Destroy every book you love.
I won't, because I love you.
Well, I love you, but I do not have to love the same books as you.
I don't love them. I'm just not going to destroy them and break your heart.
Molly, the basis of our friendship and the basis of this podcast was that you loved a book that I hated.
That is valid.
So
do you want to?
But
talk
I am
about
very thankful. Book? I'm very thankful for Nurse Katie for filling in for me.
Oh, me too. We had fun too.
Yeah.
And you know what? I owe her. I owe her. You know what? She can start next season.
Yeah.
She can pick season 7. Episode 1's book, because me forcing her how to be eaten, she gets a book next season.
I already know what she's gonna do next season.
What it let me guess, Lives of Puppets.
Yeah. We had to bump it from this season, and
yeah.
So she's gonna come on next season. But I'm very thankful for her. She's filled in for both of us in some point or another.
So many times.
And it's just nice.
All the time. Yeah.
It's just nice to have her. Like, we've had some really great guests, and we've had guests who've been on when one of us couldn't be on. But like it's a Chessie totally
next week?
Well, of course, but Chessie is different. But it's a different vibe when Katie's on because she's like
from the group chat.
She's in her circle. I don't know.
She's in her circle. She's in the circle of trust.
Like she's OG honorary book bestie.
Right, right. Because like she helped us set the structure up.
She was the very first guest we ever had.
She's season one. I mean, mm-hmm. She knows. She fucking knows.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm happy to be back, and what a fucking book to come back on.
Oh my God. Okay, so this week we are talking about Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross. Look at that. I said a whole author's name without fucking it up. Rebecca Ross. Look at me saying so proud names. Of you. Look, I think what the problem was with,
So pretty. Look at that cover.
It's gorgeous. It is. I don't know. I like the cover. I prefer the UK cover to this cover.
The one where it's like the two of them entangled
yeah,
together.
Yeah, and like there's like things. I get that the irises are her and like the flakes are like time. And like I don't like it as much as I like the other ones. I will say, this is a sweet ad, though.
Yeah.
That's a real sweet ad.
But the D and the R are the keys on a...
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying.
Like, I didn't look at the flakes as a passage of time. I looked at it as the magic between
them. Right. That's what I mean. Like, magic. Like
And this is the first book in the duology. The second book is called Ruthless Vows. And it actually came out on December 26th of 2023, which is the day that I always go to Barnes & Noble and buy a crap ton of hardbacks because they always have their 50% hardback sale, although they had something kind of different last year. But anyway, that was the release day, and I bought it before I had even read Divine Rivals, and I'm so glad I did because I... Yesterday, when I finished, I was torn between instantly needing to start the sequel and being like, I need to sit with this.
Yeah.
Because I'm not ready.
That's where I was. When I finished it, I was like, okay, I could dive into the next book. Mm-hmm. I have time. It's not that I didn't have time. But here's the thing. I knew as soon as I finished this first book, that finishing this series will give me a hangover.
Oh, 100%.
I will absolutely have a book hangover from it, and I don't have time for a book hangover. I do not have time to be in a reading slump. I do not have time.
We're prepping for con and still doing content weekly, so we don't
I don't have time for my heart to be broken and lose whatever I'm going to lose, because we always lose something in shit like this. We always lose something like this. So I just was like, eh.
So what I did instead, because this is the first adult novel that I have read.
Oh God, I forgot about that.
Since our last time that we filmed together. Now, I did read a smutty Kindle Unlimited novella.
Yeah.
But not like a full book. So what I did is I started Emily Henry's People We Meet on Vacation, which I have been putting off reading for so long. And I just dove into that, and I read something like, I don't know, 70 pages yesterday.
Damn.
It's Emily Henry. I just want to dive into all of her words and swim around. Like, she is a warm master. Blanket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a warm blanket.
And her books are always, you know, that grumpy sunshine, that the main male character always has the dark hair and the dark eyes, and I love it. Yeah. So. Anyway, so that's what I did to give myself a little refresher after this, a palate cleanser. And then I actually started a book for Con this morning. Kate Myers wrote the book Excavations.
That's it.
We're going to be interviewing her at the Annapolis Book Festival next month. And it's being made into either a mini series or a movie or something. But I haven't even finished the first chapter. I made it like maybe 16 minutes in the book, and I already was laughing.
Yeah.
Like, I was already laughing. Audibly, it is going to be, it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. This girl's life is so messy. And then, and the part that made me laugh, this is very beginning. She's talking about, excavating, you know, looking for bones and stuffage, and archaeology dig. And she's like, the top layer is the Germans, and we don't care about them. The Nazis, that's what she says. Top layer is the Nazis, we don't care about them. It's just like...
I mean...
I was like, that's so funny. Yeah, so anyway, not so wrong. I'm excited to...
We just don't say it all the time.
Yeah. So I guess we should probably do a synopsis.
I don't know, man. We can
just talk about that. Look at the cover again. So pretty. I know.
Okay, so I have a slight content warning. We are going to be talking about war,
yes,
battle, violence. There is talks of alcoholism and death in this novel. You've been warned. Also, this is a trending, massive, popularity book series. We're going to talk spoilers. Yeah. Don't we want to hear later, oh my God, they ruined this new book. Fucking hell, you've been warned.
It's a 2023 Goodreads winner, Reader's Choice Award. So.
All over the TikToks.
And I have to say, we've had issues with books that have been all over the TikToks.
Valid. Yes.
We have been deeply disappointed by some that are phenomenal, like phenomenons.
Yeah.
I'm
looking at you, Midnight Library. I'm looking at you, Lost Apothecary.
I liked the Midnight Library. I didn't like Lost Apothecary.
I did not like Midnight Library and I were on the fence. You know that.
I liked it. But Divine Rivals, yeah.
Redemption.
Yeah.
Okay. Synopsis.
Synopsis.
Iris has just said farewell to her brother. You see, Forrest has heard the song. Evna and Enva has called him to fight in her war with Daka. Daka?
Nope.
How do you fucking say that? D-A-C-R-A.
Daka? Enva.
Enva. Yes, but how do you say the other one? D-A-C-R-E? Darka? Daka?
Daka?
Daka. In her war with Daka. Iris is left behind with her mother, their small apartment, and a typewriter. Fast forward about 5 months, 6 months, I want to say. Iris has dropped out of school. Her mother has lost her job due to her drinking, and Iris is now competing for a position at the Oath Gazette versus Roman Kit. This rivalry comes to a head after Iris's mother is found dead, and she has to claim her body. Iris uses this moment to change her life. She quits the Gazette, packs her few belongings and heads over to the Gazette's rival, the ink-written Tribune, to ask to be one of their war correspondents. The editor likes her and throws her on a train. This is all in the beginning of the book, gang. This is just the first, like, handful of chapters.
Mm-hmm.
While this is going on, she is writing a mystery person through a typewriter, giving us Lake House vibes. The socials cannot stop talking about. What happens when she gets off the train? Does she find her brother? So much to unpack, and there is so much more to this story in these few paragraphs. Let's just jump in and dive into Divine Rivals because we're going to end up talking the whole story anyway. Rebecca Ross has written 10 books so far. Divine Rivals is our first. Will this be our last on pod? What do you think of her style and the use of magic in history?
Okay, so historical fantasy is not usually my jam. I don't mind books like Shadow and Bone and ACOTAR, where there's obviously we're in a past,
yeah,
you know,
like a medieval Renaissance side.
Yeah, like there's enough lacking of technology that we know this is occurring in the past,
right?
But I don't generally like historical fiction,
right?
In general, historical fantasy,
right?
In
general, it's not your genre,
right? I think the way that this book was written was fucking beautiful.
She did such a good job.
And I actually texted you, and I'm not going to ruin this part because I know we're going to talk about it, but something big happens in this book, and I cried.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really one of those people There's a lot of books that do make me cry, and I know which ones are going to do it. I was not prepared for this book
me cry. I was not prepared to be this emotionally invested in this book.
No. And so a question that, you know, we get asked sometimes is like, do you prefer to read books for character development or for plot? And this is one that I feel like the plot and character development, they feed off each other. Like, I feel like the world building was so smart in this. Mm-hmm. But for me, Kit and Winnow are better together. And that relationship, watching it unfold. We have read books. We have done two different books on pod where there's been some sort of like anonymous writing. Mm-hmm. Actually, we've done three. And in all three of them, one person figures it out sooner than the other person.
Yeah.
And this is the one I think did it best.
Yeah.
I think it's better than Spoiler Alert. I think it did it better than the Allie Hazelwood one, Love on the Brain. It for sure as hell did it better than the one we read last season.
Oh, something and Mercy.
Yeah, Heart
and Mercy.
The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy.
Heart and Mercy.
This is how you tell that story. This is how you do it.
You know, even though they have none of the similar content, mm-hmm. Heart and Mercy in this are such a great parallel about good and bad, because this is Heart and Mercy gave us a world like we were supposed to be already in it.
Gods.
Right. This one has a world we're already supposed to be in. This one built it differently. This one built it so we fed into it. It was just, Heart and Mercy is a great comparison contrast for this, because they're trying to do the same things, but Heart and Mercy fell so flat where this one picked up so hard.
Right. And I thought there were only a couple of things about this book that I felt like they could have been worked better.
Yeah.
But I loved the idea that the way that we found out these stories of the gods was through Kit finding them for her. And the thing is, what was really interesting to me is that this war was taking place because of two gods who were rivals. They were divine rivals.
The symbolism was not lost on the reader.
Right. And yet, the stories of those gods themselves, the reason for fighting, had been lost.
Yeah.
And Kit points it out. He's like, I'm sure men buried this. And that right there, to me, was like, this is how war actually works.
Mm-hmm. The symbolism and the parallels to modern day and modern war was not lost on the reader in here at all.
And she either spent a lot of time researching what it meant to be a soldier, or
was in the military.
Or was in the military. Because the way that she describes war is so...
If you can see this picture...
So perfect.
She gives off millennial naval girl, you know? She gives off, I served. But that doesn't mean anything.
But I thought she did a really good job with
it. She did
a great
job.
And somehow this book felt like we were both in World War II and not in World War II.
I know. And there's so many parallels to World War II here, which I got a question about. We'll talk about.
Oh, okay. I didn't read the notes. I did not do my job. I finished the book. That's what I did.
I finished the notes this morning, if you recall. So
I wasn't going to put you on blast.
I'll put me on blast. But I mean, yesterday was a day for the toilet. Anyway, Ross has all the tropes. Here are the few I've noticed that were like hard for me. Found family, enemies to lovers. We had a workplace drama in there for a little bit. We got war drama at the same time. Like, there are so many, she's hitting so many little niches and clicks. Like, I feel like if you were like, fill out a trope sheet, she filled out half of them. Did they all work?
I'm going to have to disagree with you, because I didn't think she was leaning heavy into tropes.
Oh, there's so many.
Besides the, like, workplace rivals to lovers, I didn't feel like she was.
Oh.
I thought that the story was actually really original.
It is. Oh, no, I'm not saying it's not original. I'm just saying there is, we have the found family at the inn, you know? We have the bad childhood because of how both of their child, like, we just.
But so then my question becomes, at what point are those tropes, and at what point are those just because that fits the plot? Like, I don't think she sat down to write
a
found family.
You think it just...
I think it just happened because it makes sense in this... I mean, you call my husband your brother.
Right.
Because you served together.
Right.
They were all essentially serving together.
Yeah.
That's a family. Yeah. Like, I don't think that was the intention. It's not like... The House on the Cerulean Sea, which is definitely found
family. That's a found family story.
And that book started on the foundation of this is a found family trope.
Right.
And really, T.J. Klune, that's what he writes, found family. Uh-huh. But I don't think that's what was happening here.
Okay. The world building in this book was, well, in a word, divine. I had to, sorry. Rebecca somehow took a god system that could rival the Greeks or Romans and throw it into a World War I-II setting in the UK-inspired world. Yeah. Well, I currently don't have a copy. Now I do. I would be interested to see if there's a map. There isn't.
There isn't.
How do you feel about Ross? How do you feel Ross did with world building compared to some of our favorites like Hunger Games in the selection?
Yeah, I think the world building in here made a lot of sense. You have now referenced Hunger Games and Selection are both books that take place in the United States. The United States doesn't look the same, but it is in the United States.
Right.
What I saw from this book was Europe.
Yeah.
England and, they're trying to stay out of it, but then the rest of the continent is fuck all and... what I thought was interesting was Enva and Dacre, as puppeteers of this war. It's not two countries or two leaders who are being marionettes, being puppeteers. It's not that. It's gods. And what makes that so different is that you could worship a leader, but you absolutely worship God.
Yeah.
So now you've put, it's crazy to me.
Parallels. Yeah.
And then there's this great parallel between Hades and Persephone, too, because Dacre takes Enva to the underworld.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was a good shout out to
Well,
that.
And then, you know, you have the use of music, right? And the use of the harp to call people and, you know, they're banning music in the big city. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you can see all these parallels to mythology, but not just mythology, to history too.
To history. It's like what Star Wars does. Star Wars, which takes place a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It's the whole idea of Star Wars is how a supreme leader is bad.
Bum, 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 bum.
Right. Ba-da, bum, bum. And essentially, we see this in Red, White, and Royal Blue, where Henry says it doesn't take a royal to see what this book is, what this movies are really about.
Yeah.
That, like, that being the...
Yeah.
The monarchy
ultimate
is
power.
Bad.
Ultimate power
corrupts is... absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah. Exactly.
And I the part that I feel like did not get enough build up was we know that these two gods and all the gods were defeated by men and they were buried and Dacre woke up. And it turns out Enva may never have actually been buried, but we don't actually get how they defeated them.
Right.
We don't get that. No. And I do want to know how that happened.
And I think we're purposely getting information withheld because there's so much she wants to tell us in that last book.
And I think it's because of what Kit said. people buried this story. They don't really want you to know the truth. And I think that becomes more apparent with what happens in the end and with her brother.
Yeah. Which I definitely have a question about.
I figured.
One of the main plot points in this book is the typewriters. Mm-hmm. After Forrest leaves for war, Iris promises to write him daily. But she doesn't mail them, but instead sends them, hides them in a closet. And
yeah, it's in her hiding place.
Yeah. She wouldn't know where to send them if she could. So mm-hmm. then she just puts them in the closet. And being that their party apartment is part of this magical city, it does what it does with letters. It just makes them disappear.
Mm-hmm.
Till one day someone writes back and says, this isn't Forrest.
Not Forrest.
They correspond off and on in this book, and it's a major plot point.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Iris learns that hers is from a set of three, mm-hmm. and that they were enchanted so that three friends could communicate over time.
Alouette typewriters.
Yes. Yes. Well, because one of them had gotten sick. Her mm-hmm. grandmother was one of those three, mm-hmm. and the Mr. Correspondent's obviously one of the grandchildren of, mm-hmm. which we know the readers because... Dub, we're getting both sides. What did you think of this magical conduit between Iris and Roman?
I thought it was an interesting way to have them be connected, and it's what gives everybody the Lake House vibes. But
yeah.
because I heard so much that it was Lake House vibes, at first I was like, okay, but then Lake House is two different timelines.
Right. When I first heard Lake House Vibes, I was like, okay, I'm waiting for it. Mm-hmm. And then we're just like in a newspaper room. I'm like, no, this is not Lake House.
right. I liked that their grandmothers gave them the typewriters. I liked that that's how they acquired them. I liked that they had this connection to each other. And I'm curious if in book two... they both recover their typewriters, and that's how they're able to communicate, because they have to be able to communicate again.
That was one of my biggest stressors at the end of that book, was like, what happened to the typewriters?
Well, she mentions that it's probably safe in, at the end. Mariana, is that her name?
Marisol.
But I had an issue with it being a typewriter, and here's why.
Because they're so goddamn heavy?
They're so heavy!
They're so fucking heavy. And an 18-year-old girl is not going to be lugging around a hot typewriter.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just how heavy they are. They talk about not wasting paper or ribbon, and yet she's sitting there typing out anonymous letters. Wasting paper and ribbon? Like, why would you not just handwrite it? Why would you not just
handwrite a typewriter? They don't have to refill the ribbon. She was saying that at some point.
No, I'm pretty sure she actually said, I should not be wasting my ink and ribbon.
Ah, shit. I thought she was saying, I don't know. Maybe I'm
But, like, so that's the part that I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
No.
Like, why a typewriter?
Why? But we can't have a magical cell phone. You know what I mean? It's too... But there is... I wrote this down in, like, my, like, diddly-do notes. There is a mix of high-tech and low-tech in this book, which I don't have a question about it, which we'll jump back into the regular questions in a second. But I like how they mixed in bombs, cars, trains, but it's still...
But I don't think that's a mix of high-tech and low-tech. I think that's what sets this book up as being World War II.
Because it's slowly bringing us technology in.
Right. But instead you have more technology than you do in World War One, and we get the gas bombs, and we get...
With the Thestrals instead of freaking airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. It's a neat... It's really, truly a really great way of world building, I think.
Yeah. It's smart.
Okay.
It's smart writing.
You're going to definitely disagree with this question, since we've already talked about this a little bit. Family is a big conversation in this book. Roman's family life is completely... is complicated, and his parents have set up an arranged marriage for him, but he doesn't want it. Arranged marriage for him, but he doesn't want it, but he feels responsible. We later learn he blames himself for his sister's death. Mm-hmm. Does this story and Roman's choices always line up? What do you think of Ross's choice to use found family in this way? Not with just Roman to Iris, but Iris and everyone else.
I don't think that the family, the found family in the inn, is Roman's family.
No.
That might be Iris's found family, but I think Roman's family is Iris.
I think, well, I mean, we know it's Iris's family when he asks for permission from each one of them to marry her.
And that's why he asks, because that's her family.
Yeah.
And he wants to be her family. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Honestly, I felt like the family backstory was a little weak for both of them. Like, of course her mom is a drunk and gets hit by a tram. And of course his dad is awful and forcing him to marry somebody. Like, to me, all that was doing was showing classism. Like, this is what the expectations of this class be.
And that's very accurate for that time frame.
But it's also a weird, like, plot hole for me, because they both have the typewriters. So even though his dad is dead set on the fact that they are upper class and she's not good enough for you because she's lower class, well, your mom was friends with her grandma. So when did that happen?
But I'm wondering if there's stuff we don't know about that friendship that the dad wants to keep hidden.
I'm sure. I feel like he was trying to marry her off because they were newer money. Yep. He was trying to marry him off because they were newer money.
And look, I mean, the other girl even knew. She's like, look, this is what we got to do. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't
the
like,
fact that his betrothed is the one that was making the gas bombs.
Wild.
That's crazy.
Wild. We're going to, I'm certain crazy. We're going to dive back into that next book too.
I think so. We're going to have to.
When Iris meets Addie on the train, neither know what to expect when they get to Avalon Bluff.
Mm-hmm.
When they arrive, Marisol, the owner, takes them in like family. Mm-hmm. While she is definitely on the front lines in Avalon, there's something soothing and hopeful for Iris there. Is it the hope she might find her brother, or is it the family she's found after the loss of her mother?
I don't think she ever gave up hope that she would find her brother. Mm-hmm. But I think that she probably needed to have somebody love her.
Yeah. Yeah.
It didn't seem like she really had a lot of love.
No, it really, even as her brother was leaving in the beginning, it never felt like anyone actively chose her.
Right.
Focused on her, chose her, and let her be her.
Right.
And in that place, in that bluff, they were actively choosing her. They were actively picking to acknowledge her, see her, and be with her. Mm-hmm. And other than her companion who was typing, her mystery friend who was typing her, no one cared about what she thought.
Right.
So. Where am I? Great question.
Couldn't tell you.
The end of this book happens fast. Iris and Roman go to the trenches and are in a real battle.
Yeah.
By the time they get settled and back in the bluff, the war has really reached them. Chaos ensues. Well, the ending. In the middle of Daka's and Unva's battle, the bluff, she and Roman try to escape. But Roman is running.
Dacre.
Dang it. Anyways, the D-named god and the E-named god. But Roman is running the wrong way. But wait! It isn't Robin! What did you think of this ending?
I was not surprised.
When
she said, I felt like somebody was watching us, when his jumpsuit came up missing, when the go bags came up missing, I was like, I knew someone was doing it. And then when Kit grabbed her, and he's in a jumpsuit, and the jumpsuit is clean, I'm like, this is her brother. I totally guessed. I also guessed that he was on the side of Dacre as well.
That was a big surprise to me. What bugged me was they're prepping for that wedding, right?
Mm-hmm.
And first they notice the go bags. And then they notice the jumpsuit. And I'm like, and I'm sitting here in the audiobook and I'm listening and I'm like, is nobody gonna care? Something is going on. There is a stranger in the house. Somebody is trying to do something bad. We're just gonna ignore it. Mm-hmm. We're just gonna And I was like, oh, okay. Even in war, people don't have good spidey senses. Like, some people just don't know to look for, like, trouble. And it's like, y'all, what were you thinking?
Yeah. It was not good. No. But I knew it was going to be Forrest. I knew that's how she was going to be reunited with him. And I had a feeling, well, I knew, I kind of thought he would be fighting for Dacre and it wouldn't be his choice.
Yeah.
And then that was confirmed when he saw the circle where Kit was. And she was like, I know more than you. We just need to go.
Gotta go. We gotta go. Like, this is it. Like,
we gotta go.
We gotta go. It was, I don't know. There was.
Her brother had changed
in a way.
He should have died.
He definitely should have died. The fact that as soon as he choked her up to kill, like, to make her unconscious, to take her away from that place, mm-hmm. she should have knew, oh, this is not the man I knew. This is not the person I used to know.
Yeah. And, I mean, I think war changes everyone, but he was literally dead, raised from the dead by the evil god and forced to fight for him.
Yeah.
And they never explain how Dacre was getting his soldiers. They only ever explain how Enver was getting hers.
And now we know how.
How?
Now we know how. Mm-hmm. That ending was really, like, heartbreaking. And I knew it was coming. I knew a heartbreaking ending was coming. Mm-hmm. I knew we had too much joy in the end with the wedding and them finally getting to be together. And it was just...
The image of him crawling to her mm-hmm. to try to save her from... He doesn't know it's Forrest.
Yeah.
The desperation that he feels. Do you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the scene in Catching Fire where everyone is trying to find Katniss so that they can get her out. That desperation of... Finnick and Peeta and really everyone that's trying to find her to make sure she's safe.
Yes.
Oh my god.
That's exactly where I went because Roman, Kit, whoever you want to call him, Kit and her relationship give
Roman
me
Roman Carver Kit.
Yes. Kit and Iris, their vibe is Katniss and Peeta and mm-hmm. I can't explain it.
No, I can't either, but I completely agree.
It is Katniss and Peeta. It is this, we belong together, but we can't be together. Right. And the world is trying to stop us from being together. And
there's also those, like, America and Maxine vibes as well.
Yes!
And this book is YA. I don't know if you have a question about this, because, like, to me, this is not YA. But it's classified as YA. They're both adults, so I don't... think that also it's like a war, but
I don't know.
So
but
is the
also,
Hunger Games,
like,
but
I don't have a question about this, but let's talk about it since we are talking about it. The sex scene in this mm-hmm. book,
closed door,
but it isn't. We're in the room with them, but the description is so vague.
Mm-hmm.
It is closed door, but it mm-hmm. isn't closed door, and that's what made it YA for me.
Yeah,
that's what made it YA for
me. But we've read adult fiction that's also closed door.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the intimacy of that scene was far more intimate than the banging you get in some other books.
Yes.
The carefulness that they take with each other. I love the fact that she tells him, I've never slept with anyone before. And he's like, that's okay. I haven't either. You know what? We don't have to do that. Let's just get married because I love you and I want that from you. But we can wait. And she's like, oh, no, we're definitely.
She's like, no, I want the thing. It's just
I want you to know that I don't know what I'm doing.
Because I was a nervous potato.
Right.
Speaking of their relationship, which, again, I knew I was going to come up on these questions as we were going. Her reaction when she finds out Carver and Roman are the same people, I don't know if I would have been that calm.
I think it's true to who she is. And it's also why I feel like this was handled better than the other books that we've read.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't an instant, are you fucking kidding me? Did you trick me? It was much more like the movie You've Got Mail.
Yeah.
I wanted it to be you.
It's always been you.
I wanted it to be you so badly. That's right. That moment.
But also, You Got Mail always bugged me because you have to feel that betrayal. Mm-hmm. There is a smidge of betrayal there. You have to feel that betrayal. I don't know how I would handle it, mm-hmm. but I know that I would want to lean into the betrayal. I would want to address the betrayal. I would want to, like, be like, hey, this made me feel shitty, and this is why.
But I think the way that they address the betrayal in this book was really interesting. It was her saying, I read this when I thought Carver wrote it, not when I thought you wrote it.
Right.
So I need you to read this to me.
Because I need to make sure it's you.
Because I need to rectify these two people in my head as you.
Right. Merge the human that you are into one.
But if she would have opened the fucking piece of paper he sent before she went off to war, she would have already known.
Which is like the very end of this goddamn book.
She would have. He wouldn't have had to fall. Well, he would have probably anyway. You know why he followed her? It's the same reason that PETA volunteered to go into the Catching Fire, to the Hunger Games again.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't not protect her.
Mm-mm. He could not. Like, that's all he had in him. He only had so much to give. And part of giving mm-hmm. was making sure she was okay.
They were divine rivals. They were star-crossed lovers. There was a fault in their stars.
You could say.
That's where you get the cliche.
Right.
But it right. didn't bother me. I was here for that.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. I know I've missed.
I gotta tell you this because I'm sorry to interrupt your questions. No, but Katie actually texted me when I told her I had started this one. And she said, let me know how you like it, because it's been one I keep seeing, and every time I go to pick it up, I'm like, nah, I don't know. I'm not going to try it. And I'm like, okay, but also, it's like, I mean, it's your genre. It's
right.
fantasy.
Right.
Romanticy. But it doesn't have dragons. So anyway, I texted her when I finished yesterday, and I was like, that book is so good, Katie. You have to read it. And she was like, I don't know. It's still not giving me a good vibe.
Katie, read the goddamn book!
Katie, because we know you're listening, because you listen to every episode.
We know you're there. One person in this world is going to watch and listen to our fucking episodes, and it's you, boo-boo.
It's you.
It's you.
I'm telling you, and Molly is telling you, you've got to read this one. You've got to read this one.
Read the
book. It's going to be the one that you're like, oh, I wish I would have read it sooner, because that's how I feel right now.
Seriously, that's I'm mad I didn't. I'm mad too.
It's how I felt when I read ACOTAR. I wish I would have read it sooner. It's how I felt when I read Shadow and Bone. I wish I would have read this sooner. Hmm. I know you don't like ACOTAR or Shadow and Bone, but that's fine.
I mean, Shadow and Bone is fine. It's just not going on the favorites list.
This book, and it's only two books. It's only a duology.
I'm involved.
So good.
I'm enthralled. I'm enthralled. Final question, actually. I know I missed so much, but this book has so much going on, I couldn't catch it all.
Mm-hmm.
Anything I really missed you want to discuss?
Never find out the situation about her dad. Her dad is never mentioned.
Never discussed. I mean, a lot of people don't talk about their dads.
I know, but they talk so intimately about their families and the family right. struggles on both sides. Thought it was a weird choice to have the sister drowned when he like dozed off, but it totally reminded me of that Little Mermaids movie from Cher made back in like the 80s or 90s with Winona Ryder and Cher and Christina Ricci. What's it called? I think it was, hang on. Now we're
going Moonstruck. Nope, that's not it. Nope, Mermaid. That's not it. Mermaid? Mermaids. It was mermaids. Literally called Mermaids.
Yeah.
I forgot it was called Mermaids.
Yeah, Mermaids.
I forgot about
it reminded me of that.
I forgot how much she was in movies back in the 90s.
She's gotta be Illuminati or something, because she has not aged, ever.
No.
I know it's plastic surgery, but still.
Moisturize me. Moisturize me. She'll be watching the Earth explode with Tenet.
Have one thing that was a for me.
Uh-oh.
So she took all the notes that she wrote like for the soldiers, and she was sending them to Carver to mail for her. So does that mean that she like sat down and like typed all of them so that that way they could be sent to him?
Yeah.
Cause then he sent them back. So he like retyped all of them and sent them back.
I think he just sent them back with, I think once the typewriter knows your intention, it just does it.
It does not explain. It does not explain. So that was the one thing that bothered me, that she's like, I'm going to sit here and type the fuck out of, why? Why don't you just write it by hand? You're worried about the cost of the ribbon. And I do
it's
feel.
Like us, it's like us worrying about the dog and mole of Winnipeg. It's us just worrying about useless bullshit.
And I do feel like. Two more things. I do feel like there needed to be more time that Roman worked as a columnist while she was gone.
I agree.
This story, even though it's dual point of views, it's really more Iris's point of view.
Yeah.
So I needed more of that story of him working as a columnist. And I don't think that the audiobook narrators were fantastic, but I don't think the audiobook did a good enough job talking about the passage of time.
Yeah.
Like, it was just sort of like the next paragraph, time has passed. And you don't get that because you're not reading the physical book.
And what's frustrating, and I'm going to volley in that to that. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, when we go from talking about saying goodbye to Forrest in the train station, mm-hmm. then it goes 5 months later. And then after that, nothing. So if we're going to talk about time, we need to talk about time the whole time, or we need to be vague the whole time. You can't pick and choose when we're talking mm-hmm. about time here, because
and,
I get it.
And there
I
were definitely, there were definitely times I was like, wait, what? What was this pivot? When did this happen?
And I get it. And in some brain, time out. I get it. War makes time feel relative, right? Like war makes it hard for people to tell what day it is. How, and I get that's kind of the point of us not understanding war, like the time frame when they're in the valley, or not the valley, wherever the fuck that little town is. But mm-hmm. when they're in the city, why not be more descriptive? They're getting daily newspapers. They're getting content that you know, dating.
Yeah, when Kit shows up, and he's got two newspapers. We never even knew that they sent their articles.
Right.
We never even knew.
So like, but I mean, in real life, we're not always going to get all the information from people. Yeah. So I get that, but it's still weird.
Also, I just want to say that one of my favorite scenes in the whole book was her running and tackling him to keep him away from
the Thestrals.
The Thestrals.
Yeah. And like, she's on top of him. And he's like, what are you doing? She's like, shut the fuck up. Don't move. Yeah. We're going to die, you fucking asshole. What are you doing here?
It was Bella running through the streets of an Italian city to keep Edward from showing his glowing skin.
Get down.
Yeah.
Too many. I think the only thing that really bugged me, and this is reason I didn't give it a full 5 stars, mm-hmm. I don't like teen marriage. I don't think I know in wartime, teen marriages happened a lot because they were going off to war mm-hmm. and they wanted to fuck and they wanted to just say bye. I get that. Mm-hmm. I get that. But these two were war correspondents. They planned to stay together. Mm-hmm. Why need to get married at 19?
I never thought of them as the age that they said they were.
Yeah.
There was a different maturity. First of all, you are not getting a job at a newspaper fresh out of school.
And
no.
After you quit high school?
Yeah, not happening.
Based off of a
Roman
one
may have
wrote.
If his dad bought his way there, but not, absolutely. Not Iris.
But Roman wanted to go to school.
But I think that they had a maturity I don't think they should have been 18 and 19. It made more sense to me that they were mid-20s. And if she would have just done that, if she would just move that age a few years,
it wouldn't be
YA.
No.
Because that's the only thing that's keeping it there.
I also think keeping the closed-door sex scene keeps it in YA for her.
I disagree because I think I've read enough closed-door adult books that it doesn't do that for me. Sarah Adams is like really well known and published rom-com writer, and all of her books are closed door.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. You're right. Goodreads rating. Are you going to read the sequel?
Duh. I gave it a 5 out of 5, and I'm going to read the sequel. I feel like it's more like a 4.75, but
that's what I gave it on Goodreads. Like,
I gave it a 5 out of 5.
I rolled it up to a thing, but in my notes I said 4.75.
So I love that the story graph allows me to give those quarter points instead of just half points. But I also feel like if I'm going to name something 4.75, just have the fucking balls to name it 5. So right. I gave it a 5. I'm absolutely going to read the sequel. We're prepping for Con right now and still getting new episodes. And I need to fucking film some videos for TikTok because I've been so off my game.
Same.
But after I have my procedure, which is going to be the day that this episode comes out, I'm having the procedure. I feel like because I'm going to be getting better that it'll be a little bit easier. But my plan is to read the sequel to this over the summer.
Nice.
When we take a break in the summer from pod, Katie and I are probably going to do Smut Girl Summer again this summer.
I'm hoping to jump in a little bit for Smut Girl Summer.
Sure. But in addition to Smut Girl Summer, I also read some books for myself. And this is one that it's one I'm so thankful I don't have to wait a year to get the sequel to, but it's also one that I need to sit with. It's how I felt with The Night Circus. That one, yeah. I just sit with The Night Circus for a few days before I could really be like, oh, I fucking loved that book. Ask me to explain why I love The Night Circus and I still fucking can't, but I needed to sit with it.
I have not fell in love with a world like this since the first time I read Hunger Games.
Yeah. It's really good.
And that says a lot because I read a lot in a lot of different genres and a lot of different, and for me to be like, okay, this is Hunger Games world building for me. That's a fucking huge, guys. That is fucking huge.
So I just think this book, it's so smartly written. The world building is really, really good. She drew on enough historical accuracy to build this.
And she doesn't write condescending, but she also doesn't write dumb.
Right. The first time that Roman Carver Kit and Iris Elizabeth Winnow kissed, I cried.
Yeah. Because it was cute and beautiful and sweet. And
it had built to this point that I was not looking for them to fuck. Yeah. I was looking for them to share something more intimate than that. And they did.
They did. Finally. Finally. You want to talk about next week?
Sure. Fuck me. Let me grab the book. Hang on 1 second.
I had it out and then I put it away.
All right. Next week, we're covering this book called The Grace Year by Kim. I think it's Liggett, but I'll look it up.
I want to say Liggett.
And we have our friend Chezzy, Francesca Zappia, author extraordinaire, top shelf author, will be here to discuss this book. This is another YA, and we don't usually do that where we stick two Y's back to back, but I didn't realize that Defiant Rivals was YA. This is a book that Molly read on her own and said, I had to read it, and then Chezzy picked it from a list. But it's interesting to me because you wanted to read this book, and I wanted to read Divine Rivals, and somehow we ended up leading the opposite episodes.
It's okay. It's okay. You'll have fun.
I'm excited. It looks creepy as fuck, though.
It is. Great. It is. It is. But not in a way, not like spooky season Molly pick weird mushroom books. It's Hunger Games at Dark.
Ooh, that sounds good.
You'll see.
So anyway, I haven't even started it yet. I'm going to start it this week. But we'll be filming that with Chezzy. And then check social media because probably this week we'll release the April titles. And as always, at the end of next month, the end of April, we will be at the Annapolis Book Festival. A lot of people have been jumping on our website. Getting there. I can see where they come to our website from. And a lot of people are coming from the Annapolis Book Festival's
fantastic
website. So yeah,
we love it. We're so excited to meet there, guys.
Authors we're gonna meet.
I know.
I started buying the books, and I gotta say, one of the books I recently read for work. Mm-hmm. It's a middle grade novel in verse. And it's about a girl who's autistic. And when I saw that she was going to be at the Annapolis Book Festival, I was like, this is, we got to talk to her.
Yeah.
We got to talk to her. The book is phenomenal. I can't wait for you to read it.
I can't wait.
So good. That's all I've got.
I got nothing else. I guess we'll talk to you guys next time.
Sounds good.
Bye. Thank you for joining us on Book Besties. Don't forget to like and subscribe. The views discussed here are those of April and Molly and not those of anyone else. Today's book was Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross. Your Book Besties are Molly Biggs and April Watkins. Editing by Thomas Watkins and music is Sleep Sweetly by Brigida. Don't forget to follow the Book Besties on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. If you'd like to contact your Book Besties, please email us at bookbestiespod@gmail.com or visit our website, bookbestiespodcast.com. Until next time, besties, get lost in your favorite book.